You're listening to Wins Above Fantasy, part of the Pitcherless Podcast Network with Van Burnett and Steve Gisuelli.
Welcome back, everybody. It is Wins Above Fantasy, episode 187. I'm Van Burnett, joined as always by Steve Gisuelli. Got a fun show, a traditional show, probably 5 years in the running, talking strength of schedule. Second half analysis, looking for advantages down the home stretch of the regular season and through the playoffs, or if you're playing Roto, where you can try to make up some ground. Always kind of an underrated topic, we've said over the years, because we spend so much time looking at the players, the underlying metrics, and that's still important for this exercise, but it's a little bit more on the high level baseball side of things, Steve, where we're looking at who's playing who. And where there's advantages to be had on the pitching side and on the hitting side. So can't wait to get into it. It's a little bit different of a rundown where we're not quite going player by player and doing the deep dive. This one is trying to boil the ocean a little bit when you look at all of these lineup or matchup advantages. And then we've selected about five or six teams in particular who have really cushy matchups the rest of the way. And we'll talk about some hitters and pitchers, but can't wait to get into it. It's always a fun show, kind of a messy one, but we have fun trying to navigate the waters. Steve, I know we were talking offline about just this time of year. It is a mixture of fantasy fatigue of the dog days of summer, although mm-hmm. we are coming off of the All-Star break, which was a much needed rest. And it's also the grind when you have to really lock in because this is where championships are won, really, when you're down the home stretch and a couple moves can make all the difference. So can't wait to get into it, man. How's it going out there?
It's good. Yeah, it's right into it. There definitely is some fatigue and that break is nice, as we talked about last week. But, I mean, like we were saying, there's not much left to this fantasy season, especially before head-to-head playoffs. Like, it's really just a month. What we were saying, I have 4 weeks left in my home league head-to-head. You have three after this?
Yeah, three after this week.
So this is it. Like, one big week one way or the other can really swing matchups and swing your fate in the fantasy season, and even for Roto too, right? Like we were talking about off air, like, you know, in some of our leagues that we're doing well in, like, okay, now it's really starting to get time to focus on the categories that you need. And like I was saying, how I'm last in steals in a league that I'm first in, right? And I'm gonna just need to cut guys that don't steal, even if they're good players, and target that. I know we don't have that specifically as a category, and it could have been here. And I could do it as on the fly when we talk about sure. certain offenses and things to target. But the season, like the long, patient, let's see how things play out, starts to go out the window very, very quickly, especially in head-to-head leagues where you need to focus on a matchup in 1 week. And that's what this episode's been. Like, even I was saying, like, before, like an hour or so before we were starting, and as we were finishing up the rundown, I was like, is it a little too early for this? Like, is it, you know, should we wait a week or so to, like, get the matchups? It's really not. It's really not. Like, this will be our, like, second to last episode in August. I think it just times out that we'll have one more episode, but, or in July, but this is it. So I think it's a perfect time for this. I'm glad that we've done this every year. I think it's been very, very helpful. In my run last year, in my home league to win, like, matchups were a big reason why, and knowing what teams to target and when, and specifically versus handedness really, really, I think, gave it that extra layer of comfort and boost. Like, I remember specifically how bad the White Sox were last year versus left-handed pitching. I mean, I know that's the easy thing ever. Like, they were the worst team ever, but they were historically bad versus left-handed pitching. And I, like, streamed Cade Povich to, like, an 8-inning, 11-strikeout game.
Nice.
When Cade Povich was, like, horrible last year, but I had the confidence to do it because of the opponent. So
yeah,
it's important to know this stuff, and it makes the difference between, you know, just making the playoffs and winning, or you know, making the playoffs or not.
Seems like every year when we get into the off season, there's always the guys that were like, oh man, like you kind of forget how big of a second half Dansby Swanson had. And it's like, well, we talked on the show about how the Cubs had a super light schedule. So I think that's true. It was also true the year that Goldie had a big bounce back second half. AL Central is always a kind of a target area because historically there's been, you know, softer matchups for those teams as well. So even like, some like White Sox hitters in the past have kind of sprouted up. So yeah, this exercise.
Andrew Benintendi last year.
That's right. And then I was trying to think, was it like Elvis Andrus or something where we're like, man, this guy is just somehow consistently hitting like 330 every week. Well, look at their matchups. This one will be interesting because this episode in particular, because as we're going through here, it's a mix of names that are like 60% rostered, or they've been like dropped in the shallowest of home leagues. So I think there's advantages to be gained there. And then there are some, unfortunately, and we'll kind of squint to look for advantages where some of the best team matchups, you look at the roster and you're like, man, who could you grab here? So we'll talk about them regardless, just in case you see one or two good starts from these guys and you're like, oh, I might need to jump on board. But yeah, it's a little bit more of a squinting exercise as we get later in the show. But Steve, we wanted to start off top with the just the nature of this. And I know before we get into some of the teams and players, we wanted to look at just big picture who to target when it comes to splits, like you teased. Mm-hmm. So yeah, before we jump in, is there anything you wanted to hit on about the topic itself? Or do we want to just kind of launch into some of the handedness advantages?
No, kind of summed it up with our little preamble there. Cool. I will also note that like in a few weeks, Nick's list completely changes from like a 1 through 100 ranking to strictly a matchup based targeting
the
list.
Week. Pretty much just the week instead of rest of season.
And if bad pitchers have good matchups, they'll be ranked higher. If good pitchers have bad matchups, they'll be ranked lower. Basically just to show how important this is. You know, the whole concept of our website changes because of this. So it's important, it's good to know, and it will give you an advantage over your opponents. I mean, we always talk about it too at this time of year. There's fatigue. People are focused now on fantasy football, and other teams may not be paying attention as much. I know that's not really the people listening to this show here as we sit on the night of July 23rd. But there is a lot of advantage to be had by knowing this stuff. So I'll just harp on how important it is again. So yeah,
for sure,
to get into it.
Yeah, so starting off with, like you said, Steve, looking at handedness, because the splits are everything this time of year. Looking at basically offenses to target if you have pitching. So for right-handed pitchers, the bottom five offenses versus righties are Cleveland coming in at fifth worst, 300 wOBA. The Rockies as well with a 300 wOBA. It is probably worth noting that Cleveland is running kind of hot right now. I think they're like 8-2 in their last 10. So stay tuned there. They've got a kind of a spoiler alert. They've got a nice strength of schedule rest of the season. So we'll talk about some of their hitters. But Cleveland at fifth worst against righties. Rockies fourth worst against righties. No surprise there. The Royals third. The Pirates, second worst against righties. They have just been awful in general. I'm speaking as someone who's rostered Brian Reynolds all year. He's finally kind of waking up, but they've been bad. And then none other than the White Sox have been the first worst offense against righties. When you flip over to left-handed pitching, some similar suspects, but Cleveland, fifth worst. The Orioles, fourth worst against lefties. Rangers, third worst. The Giants, second worst, and the Pirates, first. So Pirates and the Guardians make the list for both But then if you've got a lefty on the mound, just note that the Orioles, the Giants, and the Rangers also really struggle. So, yeah, I don't know. It's anything to add here, Steve? I feel like this is better just as you're looking at your own matchups, right, for your guys?
Yes. Like, this gives me confidence to start any left-handed pitcher in San Francisco, right? Yeah. I originally had WRC Plus as the metric to sort this by, but WRC Plus is adjusted for ballpark, and I didn't want to do that because I wanted just the offenses, like just how they perform, because when you face the Giants at home, the Giants are going to be in the context of that ballpark. Like, I wanted that context. I didn't want it to be neutral. In a way, so like I just wanted to look at the raw wOBA, where WRC plus is just like wOBA converted to a 100 as average and adjusted for ballpark. So yeah, it tells me that Cleveland and the Pirates are two offenses that no matter what I want to face. You know, and I may not want to, you know, stream a lefty against the Royals or a lefty against you know, even the White Sox potentially, right? Because they're slightly better than them. It's not saying that I would never do that, just because they're overall bad teams and better chances for wins and all that. But it may be a tiebreaker, and that additional layer of context is very helpful. And knowing, you know, and you know, these lists, these splits are easy to find on pitcher lists, on Fangraphs. So you can even look at like a more granular scale and look at who's running recently. I wanted to just leave it to the whole year to get the full sample, to get a better picture there. But, it's something that is always good to look at, and, you know, you can break down the splits however you want. That being said, like, this is going to give me confidence and know who I want to target in streaming matchups. It's extremely, extremely important.
Yeah, I think it's a good call out as well, because the first team we look at, we have two pitchers who are both lefties and both facing Baltimore, which again is the fourth worst against lefties. So we'll try to put it into practice throughout the show. So switching to the other side of the coin, the worst pitching staff against handedness of hitters. So against righties, these are the bottom five pitching staffs. You have the Arizona Diamondbacks with a 426 FIP, their fifth worst. Then you have the Tampa Bay Rays, 439, the Angels, 447, the Rockies, 455, and then the worst offense against right-handed, the worst pitching staff against right-handed hitters is the Athletics, with a 489 FIP. And then if you flip to facing left-handed hitters, you have the Angels as fifth worst pitching staff. You have the Athletics as fourth, so on the list twice there for both of those teams. And then you have the Orioles, third worst pitching staff against lefties, the Nationals, second worst, and the Rockies, number one, of course. They're on both lists here. With a 529 FIP against left-handed hitters. So, again, you can kind of look at that both ways. I doubt you're rostering a ton of pitchers across those five teams, but maybe a couple. I think it's more if you've got streamer hitters and you're looking to feast, right?
It's basically, yeah. I mean, that's not as groundbreaking of analysis. It's like, okay, streaming against the Rockies and the Athletics, probably the two most hitter friendly ballparks. Like, I want all the hitters there. I want to target guys that have an Oakland. I wonder if there is a team. We'll have to look when we get into the schedule, if there is like an Oakland, Colorado road trip for anyone. I know it's like, not too close, but, a team could potentially hit like, Colorado, Oakland, LA, Angels on a road trip. And that would be very, very tasty for hitters. So, not as groundbreaking here, but just because you know which teams are like the bad pitching ones. So it's basically who you think. I think maybe, other than like the Nats being so bad against lefties is a little bit surprising, but nothing else really. But just know that those are the teams that you want to stream against. And if you have a few, and we'll look at this through that lens as we break down the individual teams. I'm sure there'll be some teams that have some of these guys that you want to target there.
Yep. I think I counted two or three teams that get both the Rockies and the A's. I'm not sure if we got the triple crown with the Angels triple in there too. But okay, so let's jump in. We use the great website of Tankathon to kind of peek at strength of schedule rest of the way, and they kind of summarize it with the tough opponents and the easy opponents. So that's the way we've kind of categorized this. But the top team that we're starting with is the Houston Astros, who rest of the way have a series against the Rockies, a series against the Nationals, seven games against the Athletics, seven games against the Orioles, and a series against the Marlins. So when you only have about 60 games left, that's about half of their games, just about. So definitely some tasty matchups for the Astros, which I think in comparison to maybe even the rest of the show, Steve, has quite a bit of interesting candidates to talk about on both the hitters and the pitcher side. So to kind of go through this quicker than we usually do, because we could talk about any of these guys for like 10 minutes, the hitters that jumped out as kind of relevant were Bryce Matthews, who is 11% rostered. I know he comes with, you know, some interesting tools and prospect pedigree, but he's very much kind of an uncut gem with the strikeout rates that he has. That said, last three games, he has two homers, eight RBIs. Today, as we record on Wednesday, he hit fifth in the lineup. I know he's triple eligible in Yahoo at second, third, and short. Just shortstop on NFBC. But yeah, for Bryce Matthews, a guy who's just 11% rostered, those were a lot of really good hitter matchups. Christian Walker was another one that we haven't talked about in a while. I know we liked him start of the season. We had a little bit of a talk about like him or Carlos Rodon on one episode. But Walker has been dropped in enough leagues to where he's just 74% rostered now. That said, he is four of his last five games, he's had multi-hit games. I think there might be, or no, I don't think there's a homer in there, but he's definitely heating up. And with this list of teams, I think you want to correct if Christian Walker is available in your leagues. And then the last one that I thought was interesting, Steve, is Taylor Trammell, because Trammell, who was a name that we cared about. It was with the Mariners, right? Where he came up and was a really interesting toolsy guy, 70 speed, 55 raw power. And, you know, now he's obviously wound up with the Astros, but he's strong side of the platoon. And although it's a tiny sample size, he has been pretty productive over the last like 7 to 14 games and hit leadoff recently as well. So he is 0% rostered, much more of like a deep league or one to kind of keep an eye on. But with 70 grade speed against, again, in the easy run of games here, I thought these hitters were kind of interesting. So I don't know if we want to add anything on the hitters, Steve, before we get into the pitchers, which I think there's a couple interesting names to watch on that side as well.
Yeah, Walker is interesting. I think, yeah, the fact that he's been dropped in some leagues, I think he's a good trade target. You know, he is hitting .296 over the last month. It is only three homers, but you know, the All-Star break was in there, and I think they definitely are someone that could come in bunches for Walker. It's been a really, really disappointing season for him. I've held on to him in one of my head-to-head leagues basically just all year, just waiting for it to be better, and it really hasn't been. That being said, like, we saw like a similar first half, was it 3 years ago now for Walker? I think, where like, you know, we were all over him as a buy low. May not be as, convincing as far as like the quality of contact, this year, but the bat speed's still there. It's still 11.5% barrel rate, which is good. And the schedule is just really, really good. And I think patience will be paid off for those that hold on to Walker. Or if your trade deadline is coming up or hasn't passed, I think someone that is a good target just based on, you know, the fact that he's underperformed so massively, despite some eroding underlying skills, and the fact that the schedule is so favorable for him. It's a great home ballpark too, right? Like, all the reasons why we thought Christian Walker was a buy low in May, and maybe we weren't correct on that, still apply though in my mind here.
Yeah, yeah. Moving to the pitching, Brandon Walter is one that at 25% rostered, that seems a little bit low. He's has 8 starts in the majors. 6 of them have looked really good. His last 3 outings, he's got 19 strikeouts in 19 innings and a sub-2 ERA. The pitcher, just in a vacuum, is kind of interesting to me because he has 5 pitches in his arsenal. Good extension, not great, but like 70th percentile extension, good ground ball rate, good chase rate, the whiff rate, not as much, but his K minus BB is like, you got to double check, a 25.3% strikeout rate, 1.6% walk rate. So at this point across 8 starts, I mean, obviously regression's coming, yeah, but clearly a good control pitcher. And next week, he's got a 2-start week against the Nationals and then at Boston. Here's the part that kills me with Walter here. In a vacuum, I think he's under rostered at 25%, but even with this matchup that, or this string of games that the Astros have, his upcoming, just the way his starts line up, he's got Nationals next week, then at Boston, then he's at the Yankees, then he has that home matchup against Baltimore, which that is definitely like a playoff streamer if he's, you know, if he gets roughed up by the Nats or I'm sorry, Yankees, by the Red Sox or the Yankees, and he gets dropped, I would jump back in for that Orioles matchup. And then
or if you need to hold on to him, like, you know, just bench him for the Yankees one, and then
that's a good point,
you know, hold on to him so you don't risk losing him because those matchups are so good.
Exactly. And then he goes at Detroit. So I would imagine, without having it right in front of me, we just kind of teased out the next 5 weeks or so, he's got to have some strong matchups in September with just how many Astros games are lined up. So I think Walter is just a good name to watch there. And we haven't really talked about him, Steve, and he's, you know, it's kind of been a barren desert on pitchers to add. So I don't know if you want to add anything on Walter, because he's one of the more interesting names as we get deeper into the rundown.
I mean, the K minus BB gave it away, but what do you think Walter's Sierra is?
Gosh, I don't know. 305.
Close, but it starts with a 2. 293. Crazy. And, you know, I know why it's he doesn't throw that hard. It's 92. It is from the left side, so that's closer to average than for a lefty, right? Mm-hmm. And, you know, by Stuff Plus, he only has 1 above average pitch, and that's the slider. But, I mean, by results and by, you know, some of the simplest metrics that predict future success, particularly K-minus BB, there's nothing not to be in on with Brandon Walter. A University of Delaware alum. Shout out to the UDel Hens. I have a bunch of friends that went there. My wife went there. That's nice. Pretty awesome that there's someone from the University of Delaware pitching in the major leagues and pitching pretty dang well. So this is really cool. I think he's under, yes, like, even if we were just doing this analysis, like, okay, like, what underrated pitchers to target? Did he come up on, like, some buy lows for us? I'm not really sure. Maybe we've talked about him on the show.
I think it's the first time we've talked about
him. But, I mean, we should have anyway. Like, even just the last 3 starts, right? He's had 7 strikeouts in 2 of those starts, 5 in another, and walked 2 batters total in a total of 19 innings. So, really, really impressive stuff from Brandon Walter. And, like, yeah, the Astros, they do this every year with guys.
Especially with
Vance McCullers just got hurt, right? Blister, so he's on the IL. I know that the Astros are always in the market for starting pitching, but I don't think that, and Christian Javier is a little bit away. So, I mean, on roster resource, they only have 4 guys in their rotation right now. So I think there's room for Brandon Walter to take this job and run with it. I know Colton Gorton's also been pretty interesting. I don't know if he's on this. Yeah, he is.
That's a perfect segue. Yeah.
But I think there's room for both of them. I think there's room for both of them.
I think so. I mean, that's the five. And honestly, they're pretty similar in a way. They're both pretty good size lefties that don't have a lot of velo. They're right around the 91 mile per hour, like you mentioned, Steve, but they both have good.
Dude, his card extension is like exactly the same. It's like a good slider, bunch of other pitches that aren't good.
Exactly.
91 mile an hour fastball.
Great control. They're both they're just like the Astros, just kind of like, you know, clone these guys. And even down to the fact that six of the last eight starts for Colton Gordon have been good. So I think he's kind of the Brandon Walter light. You definitely want to prioritize
less strikeouts.
Walter.
Yeah.
But Lance Brozdowski did a write up on Gordon and said that, you know, he has elements that remind him of Matthew Boyd, which Boyd has been definitely fantasy value this year. So, Gordon, it's interesting just how it shakes out a little bit that he has the Athletics and then at the Red Sox, but then he gets at Miami. So he skips that Yankees matchup.
Yeah, that's nice.
But then it goes Boston at Detroit at Baltimore and then the Angels. So when you look out like seven starts for Gordon, I think overall he's got a cushier run of games, but you're kind of trading off the quality of the pitcher a little bit, but both two names that I think are interesting. And I wouldn't be shocked if we got toward the end of the year and it was like, oh, we saw a really good stretch from Colton Gordon, Brandon Walter, like don't forget about them in draft season. So yeah, those are two Astros pitchers. Not sure if you wanted to add anything on Gordon, Steve, other than the fact that it is Walter.
Gordon is Walter.
All right. Finkel is Einhorn. Well, we got our second team coming up. And it's a team that has an easy schedule, and they are an easy team to face. But we're going to take our first ad break. We'll be right back after this. All right. So, Steve, the Cleveland Guardians, that's what we're calling them for now. They've got the second easiest matchup with a series against the Rockies, two series against the White Sox, the Orioles as well, the Marlins, and then two against the Twins. So, again, you're looking at about half of their remaining games against plus-plus matchups. In terms of what's right next up for them is at the Royals. They get Colorado at home, so Rocky Road type of matchup. Twins, and then they have at the Mets, at the White Sox, Miami. So, really, like five out of the six upcoming series you would look at is a positive. And starting with the hitter's side, Angel Martinez at 22% rostered, running very hot. Last 2 weeks, a .349 average with a .1054 OPS, three homers. He's hit leadoff. He's hit second. So again, I think when you look at a guy like this who definitely has the speed on the base paths, 22%, especially with this upcoming matchup, feels a little under rostered in my opinion. He's not a huge barrel guy, but he's a switch hitter. And when you look at nine homers in 85 games, kind of sneaky. Like, if you look at his barrel rate, I don't have it right up in front of me, Steve, but it's pretty puny to where
3.9%.
3.9%, and yet he's profiling out at like a 15-homer type of full-season pace. And I think with the pole air being like dark red, there's an interesting little switch hitter here in Martinez. So he was one that definitely popped up as a potential ad. And then full circle on the season, Kyle Manzardo, all the way down to 8% rostered. He was probably like 88% rostered at one point this year. But Manzardo is still hitting cleanup. And three homers in the past 2 weeks, which has been a .261 average, .1053 OPS. So it's got me kind of, it's got my attention when you look at Kansas City and the Rockies and the White Sox and the Marlins. Like, I think there could be a little bit of value here again for a Guardians team that's 8-2 in their last 10 games. They're kind of making a little push. So yeah, anything you want to add on either one of these guys, or do they have your attention?
I did actually just add Angel Martinez in a few leagues. Glad that the schedule is in his favor. Yes, that 3.9% barrel rate and the 30% hard hit rate and the 87 mile an hour average exit velocity are not encouraging. That being said, if you look at his spray chart, they're just pull homers down both lines because he's a switch hitter. And that's an impressive skill, right? To be able to do that both ways. So he's pulling his fly balls as a lefty, pulling his fly balls as a righty.
True.
Therefore he has the 9 home runs, right? Doesn't swing and miss much. But the strikeout rate is a little elevated. The walk rate is super low. So this is a massively flawed player. That's definitely in, I think we talked about last week how I think Polaire is okay, this guy is in hot right now. It's almost like that squared up percentage with the new swing rates, but yeah. Hey, he's doing it. And I think it's more of a skill than maybe, an indicator of running hot too. It just may be, coincidental a bit in that sort of way. That being said, it's definitely interesting. Chase DeLauder, was an interesting prospect, but just had hamate bone surgery. So that should give run to him and Kyle Manzardo. It wasn't necessarily a great call, but there was lots of reasons to like Kyle Manzardo early in the year. I thought that early in the year, this was a player that was breaking out. Doesn't look to be the case, but I still think he can be useful and, have another month like he did April where he hit 9 home runs and maybe not much else, but, with this easy schedule coming up for them, it's definitely someone that I would want to stream, in those matchups specifically.
Yeah, I think I'm buying it with Martinez, looking at some of the batted ball stuff. And I know the Savant sliders aren't pretty, but a 25% line drive rate, his ground ball rate's only 38%. That's really low for kind of a contact hitter. So that's encouraging. And then looking at year over year improvements, last year he slugged 235 against the fastball, which obviously you're seeing the most of. This year it's 441. So it just doesn't seem like that's an accident to me that he's found a way to kind of, obviously turn on fastballs with the amount that he's pulling it. Like you said, Steve, it's not just homers. He's got a lot of what looks like, doubles, extra base hits that are just hugging the foul ball line. So,
and his OPS isn't going to look good with a 3% walk rate, right? So there is some consideration there.
Yeah.
But
XBA is 238. Yeah. So yeah, I mean, he hits to all fields, which kind of throws off some of those expected stats sometimes. So yeah, I think Martinez is interesting, and then Manzardo, like you said, we've been interested all year. So just it's been underwhelming. I think both of them have a shout for this soft schedule ahead. Looking at the pitching side of this, Joey Cantillo was not on my radar, Steve, as someone who I should be interested in, and immediately got my attention with the 7'4" extension. I'm a sucker for the extension guys, and the left-handed pitching with an elite changeup that grades out on FanGraphs, it's far and away his best pitch. This guy's got a 29.5% strikeout rate, 87th percentile whiff rate, just 9% rostered. Now, I do think there's some control issues, but when you look at his upcoming matchups at the Royals, against the Twins, at the White Sox, although they've been a little bit kind of streaking since All-Star break in a good way, then Miami, and then at Arizona. But really, 4 matchups in a row for Cantillo, a guy that on his day you would think could kind of light up a fantasy stat line. Cantillo's kind of interesting. I don't know. I could already see myself in a desperate pinch on a Saturday looking for a Sunday start where I'd be Cantillo, you could catch lightning in a bottle. And the other one I always mispronounce, Slade, is it Ciccone?
Ciccone, yeah.
Ciccone, okay. Ciccone is rostered at 22%, so higher than Cantillo. He is a righty. And, his upcoming matchups are Rocky Road, Twins, at the White Sox. Then he's got the Braves and then at the D-backs. So I think I'll take the first 3. I'm not sure I'm interested in Ciccone against the Braves in Arizona. But to me, he just seems like a higher floor, lower ceiling than Cantillo. I don't think he's going to come with that amount of strikeouts, But he's been a little bit more durable. He pitched today against the Orioles and had six innings, two strikeouts, three ERA, a 1.17 whip. So both of these Guardian pitchers, I know it's not a sure bet, but that's not what this show is about. It's trying to find a little bit of an edge. Curious if you've got any thoughts on either one of these guys.
Yeah, I've been interested in both of these guys. Cantillo had a nice run at the end of last year, too, basically because of these matchups sort of play. And, you know, was a name that for deeper leagues was a bit, at least someone that I considered, not saying that I have a ton of shares or anything like that. But, you know, the Guardians, in a sense, are an organization that I trust for lower end, back end pitching that could get the most out of guys. And I think these two guys are them. I probably would be a little bit more interested in Cantillo just because the strikeout rates have been impressive at every single stop, even last year, right? In those 32 innings at the end of the year, he did 27% strikeout rate, the 9.2% walk rate. There's definitely a lot to be desired with control there. I mean, there's been some games where he's basically a two walk player a game at least. There's been some starts where I think he recently walked four guys and kind of got away with it. So there I think there's some blow up potential with Cantillo, right? That being said, like, the strikeout upside is good, and those blow ups are much less likely to happen in those good starts that we highlighted, right? Like, I'm very comfortable throwing against the Royals, the Twins, Miami. I probably would sit him versus the Twins in Arizona. Like, whereas Ciccone, that was Cantillo that I was talking about more blow-up potential. Ciccone, it's kind of like, all right, I could probably run with this in a deeper league and leave him in my lineup for most of the time and expect decent results. Whereas Cantillo definitely has a higher ceiling, lower floor, and exactly what you said here, maybe a lower floor, lower ceiling, higher floor for Ciccone. But yeah, two very good options, yeah.
Yeah, and I think just going back to what you listed out on the handedness, Steve, Ciccone has, of those, that Rocky Road Twins White Sox. Being a righty, both the Rockies and the White Sox are bottom five against Rockies. Yeah. Against righties. So Ciccone's got the handedness in addition to the fact that those are just garbage lineups in general. So there's good win potential and everything. So yeah, Cantillo, Ciccone, and then Manzardo and Angel Martinez. So yeah, interesting names there for Cleveland. Moving on to a much, much better team in the Dodgers. They have the third strongest or most favorable strength of schedule the rest of the way. Seven games against the Rockies. That is a four-game series at Coors and then a three-game series in L.A. They've got a series against the Pirates, against the Orioles, against the Angels, and then two series against the Diamondbacks, which kind of tracks as favorable, but I know that that's not the same as the rest of them, right? That's just more of a...
Yeah, the Diamondbacks have a bad record, which I think is what... that is what Tankathon is based on,
yeah,
right?
Yeah.
But they're not... Maybe
their offense is a little bit...
Yeah, their offense is still really good. So, sure, pitching-wise, especially if they trade some of those pitchers, maybe like Merrill Kelly gets moved or...
Yep.
Or Zach Allen, even though that might be a bad thing for if you want to stream against Zach Allen, right? With how his year's gone.
Yikes.
But still, hey, I doubt there would be some overpowering replacement in the short term for the Diamondbacks coming up. So
we know the Dodgers line up pretty well, and it's very rostered in the top half. But worth noting that Tommy Edman has been dropped in a lot of leagues. I dropped him as well, Steve. Just couldn't handle how long that slump was. But 61% rostered, and Edman is now finally showing some signs of life. He's got a couple multi-hit games, had his first homer since mid-June over the weekend. So we've seen Edman go on hot streaks, and with this upcoming lineup against or run of matchups, nobody would be shocked if Edman pulled another kind of late summer breakout. And then there's, you know, completely like hold your nose, Michael Conforto, Hi-Sung Kim, those guys, I think we've been excited about at certain times, especially early in the, you know, pre-draft. Conforto, I think, was a popular breakout pick. Just again, noting that August and September are months that we might look back on and say, oh, Conforto had a really good August or something, even though he's kind of got the platoon thing going on. But not sure if you want to add anything on those three names on the hitter side for
if LA. You need hitters, if you need hitters to stream and want to get a piece of a good offense, that's this is a way to get exposure to the Dodgers with a favorable schedule. You know, stream Michael Conforto for a week where he faces five righties, right? And five righties on bad teams. Same goes for Edwin, just the other way around. Edwin does hit lefties a lot better. I know he's a switch hitter, but he does hit lefties a lot better. So easy way to take advantage of the schedule and the handedness and get exposure to one of the best teams in the league, right?
Yep,
That could be the difference between winning a matchup and losing a matchup, having even if you get like two runs from Conforto on a day where he goes 0-for-3 or something like that with two walks and the Dodgers score 15, right? Every little bit counts.
Yep. And on the pitcher's side, Emmett Sheehan is a name we've talked about and liked over the years. It hasn't been all that great for Sheehan. I know he had a rough outing against Milwaukee in his most recent one. He did have three, I guess you could call them good starts prior to that. It wasn't like dominant, but just 19% rostered for a guy that we know has upside, right?
Yeah.
Unfortunately, when you look at his matchups, it starts at Boston and then it goes at Cincinnati, which just bad ballpark, bad team. And then at Tampa Bay, which is kind of the same story in terms of just the ballpark and the team.
Yeah.
The Blue Jays, who have been pretty good. And then the Padres. So that's one that, again, it might be more of like a September call, but a little bit rough for Sheehan in terms of the most upcoming matchups. A little more interesting, and again, this exercise is just kind of how the matchups line up, but Clayton Kershaw, a name that we haven't talked about in the peak of Kershaw and Wins Above Fantasy, but it's just fun to see him on the rundown. Wanted to say that. 59% rostered for Kershaw. He's at Boston this Saturday, but then after that he's got at Tampa, home against the Cardinals, who have been kind of sputtering, and then at the Angels. Then he goes to Colorado, which is kind of, you know, it could be crazy bad. It sometimes can be crazy good in Colorado if you're just really rolling the dice. And then at San Diego as well. So at least a three-start stretch after this one in Boston on Saturday, where it's interesting for Kershaw, just 60% rostered, but what do you think, Steve? You think Kershaw's still got a little in the tank to help teams? Yeah.
Yeah, I think he's been pretty useful, like matchup dependent play even before this analysis, and even, you know, when the schedule maybe not wasn't as favorable as obviously favorable, right? I would definitely avoid him for the next two starts, Boston and Tampa, both away in hitter ballparks versus good offenses. But basically for the rest of that run, I want him. I can see rostering Kershaw from mid-August or early August on. Like, even at that San Diego start, like, San Diego's offense has kind of cooled off from the beginning of the year. It's not that deep. I know a lot of this may change come trade deadline. The Padres have been rumored to add a bat, and a lot could change. And a lot of these bad teams can get worse if they trade away guys. Like, imagine the White Sox without Luis Robert, who's been heating up recently. Like, you know,
right? It's a good point.
Imagine the Cardinals without, I know Arenado hasn't been great, but whoever else they may trade. So there's that to consider as well. But Kershaw, yeah, he's been serviceable. Like, It's obviously not close to prime Kershaw, but it's still been pretty good, and someone that could help you win leagues, especially with those good matchups. I mean, I would even start him at Colorado. Like, we talked about, like, Colorado has some of the worst WOBA at home and on the road. I know it's still risky, but that, didn't Kershaw throw the no-hitter back in the day in Colorado? I think that was that him, right? Right. It was versus Colorado. I don't know if it was, home or away. I could be wrong there, but maybe it was in Colorado. Maybe I'm telling myself that so I could feel more comfortable about him streaming.
Yeah,
in
Colorado. I like it. Yeah. So you're a no-go on at Tampa.
No, Tampa. The
I know,
I mean,
Caminero and Yandy and stuff.
And no, like, it's more the ballpark.
Oh, gotcha. Okay, right.
It's the big Stein. It's Steinbrenner Field, Yankee Stadium, outdoors in the heat of August in Tampa.
Like, yeah,
it's been an extremely hitter friendly ballpark. I would absolutely, and the Rays offense is pretty good. It's just that ballpark is a bandbox, and
Lau might be back. Yeah. Lau might be back in time for that. So yeah, good point. Okay, well, we got what do we got? Two more teams we're gonna get to, but we're gonna take our second ad break, and we'll be right back after this. All right, so Steve, we kind of talked about last year with Dansby Swanson emerging. The Cubs are back on the list here with remaining matchups against the Rockies, the White Sox, two series against the Athletics, a series against the Orioles, and then that might be off. I should check that. There's another they've got eight games against. Maybe that's the D-backs. I think it is. So that's another one that kind of comes with the caveat. Let me just double check that real quick. Remaining strength of schedule. Cubbies got
Braves. Is that three against the Rockies, three against the White Sox, three against the Nationals, six against the Pirates. Pirates, there you go. Six against the Braves, which is another one like bad results, maybe not want to target.
Yep.
And three against the Orioles.
Okay. So definitely some cushy matchups. And we should check, I'm curious if that, maybe if you want to look if that Rocky series is at Coors or not. I'm not sure if it is. But to get into the hitters on the Cubs lineup here, Matt Shaw jumped out at me, Steve. He's another guy that that I had and dropped. I couldn't really stomach the June with the 193 average of 536. But we talked about how important it is to basically adjust back once the league makes adjustments, and it seems like he's going through that right now. He's on a six-game hitting streak with three homers, a couple steals in there as well. You know you're going to get that from Shaw, especially with how much the Cubs run. And yeah, when you look at all those awesome matchups, I think Shaw, even though he's cemented kind of hitting ninth in the order, we could see a nice little resurgence for Matt Shaw, just 21% rostered. So that one jumped out. When you look at the pitching, it's a little bit, you know, you really got to hope that some of these kind of pan out. But you got Cade Horton at 14% rostered. He's kind of been up and down in terms of results, but two of the last three have been serviceable fantasy outings. He's got at the White Sox this Saturday. After that, he's got the Orioles, in Chicago against the Reds, at Toronto, which you probably want to skip, home against Milwaukee, they've been tough, but then at the Angels. So four of his next six are what I would say, you know, good matchups. It's just the question is, do we think the pitcher's good enough to capitalize on that? And then kind of the counterpart is Colin Ray with no strikeout upside really, but again, four of his last five starts have been good enough for ratios and just giving you some volume. He did get kind of roughed up by the Royals today, but his upcoming matchups at Milwaukee, you'd want to skip that one, but then home against the Reds, at St. Louis, home against the Pirates, and then Milwaukee again. So, you know, again, you have to ask questions about if we like the pitcher in general, but three starts in a row that you could possibly see, you know, maybe first week of August till the third week of August, you're kind of riding the Colin Ray train, who's 36% rostered. So between Matt Shaw, Horton, and Colin Ray, is anybody here jumping off the page as someone you'd be interested in targeting?
I think I'm more interested in the hitters, and it's for later on. Okay. Their schedule at the end of August is pretty exciting. It is at Colorado, but they have a stretch starting from the 22nd of August where they face or they go to L.A. to face the Angels.
Okay.
They then have three games versus the Giants, which, you know, is not ideal, but the Giants also, you know, it's not the worst matchup in the world. Then three games at Colorado, three versus the Braves, versus the Nationals, then at the Braves. And those Braves teams may not have, you know, Schwellenbach is probably done for the year. Who knows who they've sold off. Spencer Strider may be, you know, a little bit limited.
He hasn't been lights out.
Hitting-wise, those could have the potential to be very, very good matchups. And then they also have the Nationals in between there, too, which we talked about how bad the Nationals were. Versus left-handed hitters as a pitching staff. So, yeah, it's a good hitting schedule. I think Matt Shaw could like potentially be like a player down the stretch that could be really, really interesting. He's starting to heat up. He has two homers in his last three games. The steals have been there basically all year. He has 13 in the 69 games that he has played. And the Cubs offense just in general has been really, really good. So,
yeah, right.
Another one that like, you know, like the Dodgers, a way to get a piece of a really good offense in really good situations. So I like the Cubs hitters in the end of August.
Yeah, that's a good note. That's a solid combo when you get Angels and Coors and a 2 out of 3 stretch there. The only other player hitter on the Cubs roster who is even available in leagues really is Carson Kelly at catcher at 28% rostered. So I think you could add
Swanson
that to
maybe
the list.
Out there. In
oh
some
yeah, that's
too,
a good
right?
point.
Yeah.
I wonder what. Let me look up Swanson because he did the same thing last year. It looks like Dansby is okay, 84%, but being dropped.
Yeah, Fangraphs, Fantrax 96%. So
yeah,
maybe
so
not
pretty
as
rostered,
well.
But.
He's got 16 homers and 8 steals and hitting .254. He's worthy of being rostered.
Yeah, that's fair. Okay, so that's our Cubs list. I agree, though. I think the hitter side, I'm not sure Horton and Ray, especially when you look at you know exactly what we just saw today from Colin Ray on 4 earned runs against the Royals is not what you want.
Yeah, he may not be matchup proof. Yeah.
Nope. Okay, so rounding out with the Padres here, who have, I guess we're calling it maybe the 5th or 6th easiest strength of schedule. Mm-hmm. They've got 2 series against the Rockies, home and away. They got the Nats. They got the Pirates, home and away. They have the Orioles, and they have the D-backs, home and away. So Rockies, Pirates, D-backs, they have 2 series each, and then the Nats and the Orioles. So they also, their next... 2 out of their next 3 series are at the Cardinals and then home against the Cardinals. So definitely some interesting pitching matchups here. Similar to the Cubs, we have to ask the question if the guys available are even worth the time of day, which we can look at. But from a hitter standpoint, when I looked at the lineup, Steve, and I guess there's probably guys, I didn't put them on the rundown here, but it seems like Cronenworth is the ultimate rental. Yeah, 16% rostered. He's kind of always the guy that can just kind of fill in and whatever. He'll hit like .250 for you and maybe give you some runs. But Gavin Sheets was one at 23% rostered that I kind of circled here just because he had that insane, I think it was May or something, where he rattled off like 7 or 8 homers in a month. And it's almost a Jake Berger thing where when they start getting hot, the homers come in bunches. And with this run of games, you could definitely see, again, we talked about the D-backs. They're not a hitter matchup, but if you're going against their pitching for 6 games, that's not a bad thing. Same with, I mean, I guess the Pirates, you got Skeens, but overall, it's pretty cushy. So Gavin Sheets is one that If I get the Twitter updates of like a homer or 2 homers, I might rush out and be like, okay, let's jump on the train, and he might go berserk. Thoughts on the hitters before we get into the pitchers, because that's kind of a whole separate story.
Maybe more of buy low opportunities. You know, Tatis has been disappointing, I would say. Machado's been pretty good, but probably gettable. Xander Bogaerts is definitely gettable and maybe available. Jackson Merrill has definitely been disappointing and had an injury-riddled season. So I know he has had a two-homer game just before the break, and it's been a little bit better coming out of the break, but still maybe acquirable if you could, you know, put past their struggles for the season so far, and potentially acquire one of those Padres hitters, especially if they acquire another bat to lengthen that lineup. You know, because it basically goes from like Tatis, Machado, Bogaerts, Sheets, Merrill, and then like they're running out like Brandon Lockridge and Tyrell or Wade and guys that really shouldn't even be on major league rosters for the most part. So they need to strengthen that lineup, you know, and maybe they will do that, and that could help expedite some of those good pitching matchups, even though there may not be someone that's available on the wire that you want to add, because I don't know if I necessarily want to add Jake Cronenworth despite all that.
Yeah, I am. I'm trying to look at Merrill's an interesting buy low target because he's just been it really has been so like lackluster.
It's such a lost year,
But he's still you know, a 12.5% barrel rate, a 277 XBA. Obviously, he's still a good player, and it looks like month over month, it's not great, but his barrels are kind of bouncing back. In the
a lot more
July.
Swing and miss this year too. Definitely a bit of a sophomore slump. That's for sure.
Yeah. It'll be interesting to see what happens with him in draft rooms. But yeah, great call on buy lows, because I think you want Padres hitters, and there's several like you said that you could go out and get. Switching to the pitchers, Steve. It's like the Cubs situation, but even worse, that the names that popped up were Randy Vasquez at 5% rostered and Steven Kolek at 4% rostered. It's such a shame, because both of them have back-to-back matchups against the Cardinals, away and then home. Vasquez has at Arizona, which no way, but then at San Francisco and home against San Francisco. Kolek is the same thing, except instead of at the D-backs, it's against the Red Sox, so equally bad. But I guess when I look at these two guys, there's a little more to be interested in with Kolek, just because the control seems like a stable floor, and he's a ground ball pitcher to some extent. But these are the types of guys that, you know, you'd be happy with three strikeouts in like five innings
and a cheap win.
Yeah. But, I mean, maybe when you're desperate, if you're thinking of, who to add, these guys would not be on the top added list. You'd kind of have to just go out and hunt for them. But I don't know, man. What do you think on these two? Humberto,
it's hard. It's really hard. But like in desperate times, like, these are the Hail Marys that you may have to throw. Like, you may need to start Randy Vasquez at San Francisco. You know, and be a little bit more comfortable with that, just considering that they aren't a great, great offense. Or, you know, I'd rather do it in the St. Louis starts, just because the Giants are better versus lefties, and both Vasquez and Kolek are righties. So, not ideal, but just something to keep an eye on. And who knows, maybe if the Padres call up a lefty or something for a spot start. I don't know off the top of my head who's like next in line as a lefty in the minors there, but potentially someone there could be interesting, right?
Yeah, I was trying to see if there's any big names that we've heard of, but I don't necessarily know some of these guys.
Not really. Yeah.
Okay.
There's
so
no Wes Benjamin. There's no one that I know that's like on. I'm on roster research. It's like, oh, this is an interesting lefty I want for a spot start. There's Jackson Wolf.
Don't know him.
Austin Krob. Yeah, I don't know who these guys are.
We're deep, man. This is that time of year. Okay, so looking at the whole list on the show, Steve, I think. Astros, Bryce Matthews kind of has the mystery box appeal. It would come with a lot of the swing and miss. But I think Walter and Gordon, I wish those matchups were better, but I think Gordon has slightly better matchups there. I think the Guardians are an interesting one between Martinez, Manzardo, mm-hmm. Cantillo, and Ciccone, and those were really good pitching matchups there. So yeah. I think those are ones that I'm definitely adding to the watch list. I think Kershaw's a good shout. I think if Edmund's available and he keeps hitting, it could happen. I liked what you said on more focus on Matt Shaw and maybe a Carson mm-hmm. Kelly than the pitchers for the Cubs. And then, yeah, I think buy lows on Padre hitters or possibly Gavin Sheets if he shows some life.
Yeah.
Would you agree with that recap there?
Yeah. 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 I think that's a fair way to look at it. And really, really good info. That's actionable. I'm glad this is part of our yearly rotation for sure.
Yeah. All right. Well, it's the grind, folks. Good luck if you're battling away. Steve, I know we'll be texting when we're down the home stretch here. Like I said, I've got a couple crunch matchups right on. It's pretty nuts, dude. Our home league, for like the first year ever, the top two slots are wide open in terms of like one or two weeks could actually steal the bye.
Yeah.
And then, yeah, it's also it's one of those that like the gap between 10th and 3rd is like 12 categories or something.
That's nice.
So like it's going to be a photo finish for us. So I'll keep you posted on that. And then,
please,
you're one
do.
Week behind me, man. Yeah. Where are you at in the standings hanging out over there?
I am in second in my home league, two games back first.
So you're cozier. Yeah. Yeah. Two games. See, I'm in sixth and I'm 8.5 out of first. So
okay. So just, yeah, you're crazy tight. Yeah. Our top three is really tight. Then there's a bunch from, you know, there's 4 and 5, and then 6 to 8 is tight too. So we're a little bit more spread out. Usually there's been like a grouping from like 6 to 11 that can kind of make runs, but it's a little bit more clear cut this year with how it worked out in my league.
Yeah, nice. All right, folks. Well, we will be back next week and every week the rest of the way through September. But thank you guys for joining us on episode 187, talking second half schedule analysis. Until next time, thanks for talking baseball with us.
Thanks, guys.